We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Johnson, you're on the
air. Oh, thanks, Al. Welcome back, 95 WIP. 9 o'clock hour here in the Delaware Valley. And tonight, the 76ers return from the All-Star break. Stretch run begins. 27 games to go, beginning with the Brooklyn Nets. And joining us on the line, covers the Philadelphia 76ers for The Athletic. His name is Derek Bader. What's up, Derek?
Good morning.
Well, so Derek, obviously the Sixers host Brooklyn tonight. And dating back to last weekend, Joel and Ben have been proclaiming how they have each other's back, and they said all the right things. However, you know, Embiid went as far as to saying the media has been trying to tear them apart. Derek, is Embiid not seeing what everybody else saw and kind of just pointing it out, about worried about how, you know, how they can coexist on the floor together? What do you think? Is Joel in the right state of mind here making that statement?
Yeah, I mean, it's to me, the statement would be a lot easier to take if you hadn't just sort of started a controversy with the whole Jimmy Butler Instagram comment that he made a couple a week or two ago. You know, I think it makes sense for him to be a little bit defiant, to show support to Ben that he believes they can coexist. Like, I get that. But a lot of this is self-created controversy because of his own actions. So, yeah, I think there's a little bit of a disconnect there. But I would expect some sort of defiance that, yeah, we believe we can coexist, even if maybe there is some doubt.
Now, do you think? Now, I'm guessing here, and I've been, you know, Billy King's with us today, and I've been, you know, going back and forth with this about Billy. Is it possible that, you know, they're saying all this to us, but they've had the conversation, he and Ben, and kind of said, all right, we know this comes down to us. We have to refocus here. There's 27 games to play, and they will use what has transpired and the controversy and the comments made about them as motivation moving forward?
Oh, sure. I mean, we see the Patriots every year somehow paint themselves as the underdog. I mean, this is like trying to find something to galvanize the team, I think, is certainly something you'd expect them to do at this time if this is what they need to sort of use as that motivation, as that belief, as that galvanizing force. And sure, go for it. I think they can, you know, I think teams and athletes and stars will look for just about anything at this time of year, whether it's true or not.
Well, I want to pick your brain a little bit about the changes in the roster, so to speak, or the adjustments in the roster. And we saw a glimpse of Al Horford out of the starting five, the final game before the All-Star break. And it was successful, albeit it was one game, and they made the proper adjustments as the game went along. But yesterday, Brett, further on to say he expects Al to continue to come off the bench. Are you surprised he's sticking with it?
No, I never thought they made a move of that magnitude for a player of that stature for one game. Like, I think that was something that was a slow buildup that they had been contemplating for a while. And when you make that sort of a change, I think you do that specifically because you're going to do that for the long term. I don't think they would have made that to match up against one team in February in the regular season. So, no, I wasn't surprised that they're sticking with it. You know, I think it'll be interesting to see how much overlap, because against the Clippers, the Horford sort of got a little extra run because Embiid got in some early foul trouble. So how much overlap? Will you just cut Horford's minutes, or will you have more overlap with Embiid and Horford, who will continue to start because the Sixers started Furkan Korkmaz in the first half and Glenn Robinson in the second half? I think those are still interesting conversations. But no, I fully expected that they would stick with Al Horford, at least for the time being, coming off the bench.
Well, is there anybody, you know, I imagine Brett might go through a variety of players, or at least what he has available, to kind of see who might be the proper fit depending on the opponent in that starting five in place of Al. Who would you prefer?
Yeah, it's a good question. On the one hand, I think Korkmaz's shooting is the most obvious fit. You know, he's shooting a little over 43% on catch and shoot threes. So the opponent has to really defend him at the three-point line. He can run off of some screens, run off of some dribble handoffs. I think he can open things up offensively for your two best players the most. But on the other hand, I think Glenn Robinson III, he sort of takes a lot of times, especially when you talk about the playoffs. And playoffs are interesting because I think you could see a little more Al Horford and Embiid together when you start matching up with teams, maybe like that sort of two traditional big men in Indy, or you want someone to defend Giannis. So I think it could be interesting to watch that. But in the playoffs, I look a lot of, like, how much does a player take off the table? And Korkmaz takes a lot off the table defensively. There's going to be a lot of matchups. You're just worried about him and whether or not he can defend his man Whereas Glenn Robinson III, he can give you some of that spot-up shooting without as much of a drop-off defensively. So I think those two are sort of where – I think they're the most likely candidates at this stage. I think I'd probably let Robinson III play right now and see how that looks, just because I do think he's a more playable defender in the playoffs. But I do think Korkmaz has the most upside offensively. I think they're going to want to keep Alec Burks as a scorer off the bench, so that's why I'm not mentioning him.
Hey, Derek, do you worry? This is Billy King. How you doing? Do you worry if you do that to Korkman, does it affect him? Is he able to get his mental capability back and confidence back if you do that and you take his minutes away now?
Yeah, a little bit. But this is also, like, he's a guy, so far this season, his numbers are better off the bench. He's shooting better. He's actually averaging more points per game off the bench despite playing five fewer minutes. So he's had success in that role. And look, this is a guy who had his third-year rookie option declined just a year and a half ago. He was an unrestricted free agent, came back on a minimum contract. So I think overall he would view the season as a positive step in his NBA career, even if maybe he's not, he's brought off the bench again. I don't think he's ingrained enough as a starter where this would derail the progress that he's made. I do think it is a fair concern, but I also think that the bigger concern for me is, so you look at his numbers and he's shooting much better off the bench in a reserve role. Is that just because he's not accustomed to it? Can you get that kind of effectiveness if you bring him as a starter? And can you get that kind of floor spacing? Because I do think he is the one that defenses. The Clippers the other night, a week ago, they started the game off defending Korkmaz with Paul George. If you can get that kind of respect from the opponent, that opens things up from not only Embiid, but also Josh Richardson, Ben Simmons. They now have an easier matchup to attack. So I think there's a lot of intrigue in Korkmaz as a starter. I just wonder if they're going to want to have a more versatile defender in that role.
Now, Derek, we're through 55 games. Sixers sit at 34-21. We know what their record is at home. We obviously know what it is on the road. Do we know what they are because we're two-thirds of the way through? Or do you think there's still enough time to, come together, right the issues on the road, build more continuity, et cetera? Do we know what they are, or has that yet to be determined?
I think some of it is to be determined. I think defensively, we know they're a very good team and probably can be great when they have all of their pieces together and are playing at optimal effort level, which we haven't always seen this year. Offensively, I think it's very much a work in progress. I do think a decent chunk of our what we view as a step back just comes from what has really been a catastrophic offensive fit with Al Horford next to Embiid and Simmons. So now we get a chance to evaluate what that will look like with more natural shooters, more natural perimeter playmakers alongside them. Can you get Embiid and Simmons back up to where you need Embiid and Simmons to be in order to be a true contender? So I think that is a little bit up in the air. I still think there are limitations of this team defensively. There's a shot creation void where they brought in Alec Burks, and he's probably their best pick and roll scorer, their best three-level scorer that they have on their roster, which is great that they got that skill set, but ideally you want that skill set to be a little bit better than Alec Burks. So they still have a real void in that regard. And can they execute in the playoffs? Can Alec Burks be effective in the playoffs? Can Glenn Robinson be effective in the playoffs? And Ben Simmons, who last year sort of had a security blanket in Jimmy Butler, can he now be that sort of half-court creator that he didn't need to be at times last year because they don't have anyone to really fill that role? I think there's still a lot to learn about this team. I do think moving Horford to the bench is step one in figuring out exactly what you have and what's viable in the playoffs. But yeah, I think there's a lot to learn still.
Well, as we start to turn our eye to the playoffs, and we'll kind of monitor the standings after each and every game, they're sitting in the fifth seed. If they can manage to turn things around on the road, or at least kind of level out on the road, how much ground do you think they can realistically make up in order to have at least one round of home court?
Yeah, so this is a team that has, outside of this upcoming West Coast road trip and the game against the Bucks, they have a really soft schedule here for the rest of the season. And we saw that 2 years ago when they went on that run, even when Embiid was missing time, when they went on that run at the end of the season. So I think there's a team that they could go 20-7 over the final 27 games. They could end up with 53, 54, maybe even 55 wins if they get on a roll here, in part because I think this lineup is more natural, and in part because they're playing a lot of easy opponents. So I think they can make up some ground. Can they get up to the 2 seed? No, I don't see them doing. The 3 seed is an outside chance. But I think there's a chance with the 4 seed. I think this is a team that could catch Miami, outside chance of catching Boston, because I do expect them to play well over here over this final stretch. So first round, yeah, I think there's a chance. But getting up into that two seed that I think we all envisioned, I think that is going to be real tough.
Derek Bodner, nice enough to join us this morning. And Derek, as we're looking at the standings after each and every game and we're envisioning potential playoff matchups, we all have some that we think would be ideal and work out beneficial for the Sixers. But who, in your opinion, right now would be the worst possible playoff matchup for the Sixers?
Yeah, I mean, it's so if you're talking about like a first-round matchup?
Yeah, let's go with first round.
I mean, I think Boston is the best team, assuming they're not going to fall to seven and play Toronto, so that's out of the question. Of the teams in the 3, 4, 5, 6 they could play, you know, I think Boston is the best team of that group. Best coach team, best depth, players who I think can play well in the playoffs and have shown they can do that. You know, I think the Sixers match up pretty well against them. I think Boston has no real chance of stopping Embiid with Daniel Theis. I think the Sixers have a couple of number options in slowing down Jason Tatum. I think Ben Simmons does a really great job in that role defensively. So I think they match up pretty well. But I still think there's just a part of me that trusts Boston the most, trusts Brad Stevens the most in the playoffs. Mm. So I would say avoid them. But honestly, I think the Sixers actually match up pretty decently against both Boston and Miami. Even though their teams are playing more consistent basketball, I just think the matchups in the playoffs will help the Sixers cover up some of that gap.
Final question I have for you, Derek, and it's kind of what I've been trying to figure out this morning. No one knows for certain, but based on what we know right now, and granted, you know, you're around the team all the time, you speak to players, you know how the mindset is, how the coach thinks. Do you still see, or I shouldn't say still, do you see this Sixers team as an NBA Finals team?
No. But in large part because I think Milwaukee's just been head and shoulders above what any of us expected. Like, would they have a chance in a series? Yeah, there's a chance, but where I would have maybe thought a 35-40% chance at the beginning of the season, I might drop that to 15% chance of winning a series against Milwaukee. And I think a lot of that, part of that is because the fit with Horford has been so bad. And in a series against Milwaukee, you would need Horford defensively in order to have any chance of slowing down Giannis. He played real well against him last year. In the playoffs between the Bucks and the Celtics, you'll need him this year too. But that fit offensively has been so bad that I struggle to see them beating that Milwaukee defense 4 games out of 7. So do I see them as much of a title contender as I did at the beginning of the season? No. That is in part because Milwaukee is much better, in part because that crucial fit has been significantly worse.
Derek Bodner, senior writer for The Athletic, covering the 76ers. You can follow him on Twitter for links to all his stories and the latest Sixers news at Derek Bodner NBA. Derek, thanks. I'll see you tonight.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, Derek. Sixers fans have been trying to figure this out ever since they signed him. Nobody complained that Al Horford's here. We're happy that Al Horford's here. The issue is the amount of money over the amount of years. Is that really what it took? Do you think that's really what it took to get him here?
I think I need my microphone on. I think so, because I think Boston, if he would have taken, I think Boston had a deal on the table for, I think it was 3 years. So he'd have stayed there. And usually when you go to sign a free agent, you end up have to overpay him to get a guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if they felt they needed him that bad, they were going to have to overpay him.
Well, they certainly overpaid him.
Yeah.
And you pay him that much money expecting with championship aspirations over the next 2 years, right? Like,
yeah.
You know those
yeah.
final year, maybe two,
you're
just eating that money at a certain point because everybody's body breaks down
eventually. Well, you're banking on the fact that when he gets into his last year deal, you can move it for something else because everybody
right.
wants that expiring contract. So you look at it, if you give him four, you're probably going to get 2.5 good years out of him, and then you probably could move him with an expiring contract.
And they were expecting him to take more of a leadership role,
exactly,
right? But
exactly.
You can't have it with a guy when you're not performing well and you're coming off the bench. That's hard to be that guy.
Yeah. And the biggest thing I think is just I think they underestimated the shooting that they would need.
Boy, did they.
Because last year, I mean, to me, J.J. Redick gave them unbelievable shooting, but also gave them unbelievable leadership in the locker room. You would always see J.J. grabbing Joel.
Big time.
If things got out of control. Or,
they had a great rapport.
Yeah. And so to me, sometimes you underestimate team chemistry and what a guy brings. And maybe you look at his defense, he lacks in the playoffs. But you need a guy sometimes to be that leader.
Yeah, yeah, and they need that go-to guy, and J.J. provided that a lot of the time. Kelly's on the line. Now, Kelly, you have a Flyers question,
yeah,
don't you?
Yeah, how?
I do. Well, first off, I want to send Gail well wishes. I hope Angelo's not driving you nuts.
Hmm.
And
he is.
Angelo, I hope you're making good use of your time binge-watching something relevant. anyway, okay, so the Flyers have never swept the Blue Jackets.
Is that correct?
No, this is tonight they could sweep.
Okay. This is the home. This is the tail end of the home
tail
at home.
Home and home.
Home at home. And, you know, I feel like teams that are on a losing streak are dangerous. And the Blue Jackets have lost six straight at this point.
Under Tortorella, no less.
Yeah, well, that's got to be going well.
They lost Seth Jones, a terrific, terrific hockey player, defenseman. And they really have struggled since he's been injured.
So other than, I mean, the play of Pitlick has been off the charts amazing. I've enjoyed watching him play. Just what he brings to the game. I mean, blocking shots alone, I think he has like 33 or 34 block shots on the season so far, and he's only been in, what, like 54 games? Yeah, and just, you know, he's dynamic. Who do you think needs to have a breakout performance to be able to beat the Blue Jackets and then just continue the drive to playoffs?
All right, who needs to take control here, Al?
I don't know if they need a breakout tonight. I think tonight they just have to get a lead because Columbus doesn't have anything to come back with, which was huge getting a couple goals that last game, even if they were fluky. I think because Giroux had that terrific assist in the last game, I look at their big guys. I mean, you mentioned Pitlick. I expect that we're going to get – they have a good energy guys. But I think if they're going to go anywhere, it's going to be Giroux, Couturier, Hayes especially, that are going to come through. They would have to come through in this. And I'm assuming they'll play – I think it'll be – they'll switch goalies tonight because –
Oh, yeah, we're going to go with Moose tonight?
Well, I mean, you know, he hasn't played for a while. So I would be surprised if that's not the way that they're going to go. But I would it's another – I think they're in.
They're in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I look at their schedule and what they've done. I think they're going to be in. I'd be really disappointed at this point if they didn't hold on to what they have here and not make a playoff.
Is it wrong to just give all-out praise to AV for this?
No, it isn't. He's done a hell of a job in raising expectations. But I do think when you looked at the last with Hakstol, I think the message from management was that we're rebuilding, and there wasn't really a – it wouldn't seem like a demand to win every night. Like, well, let's develop our
coach
defense.
Certainly feels differently.
This guy. Every night. Yeah, no, I think it's a big deal. I mean, if they sweep this thing and they beat Tortorella's team again and get some energy going, I don't think it'll be easy tonight, though. I think it's going to be difficult.
You know, not against losing six in a row.
Kelly, do you like a man with facial hair or clean shaven?
Let me see. Okay, so I've been married twice.
Okay.
And the ex-husband was basically bald with a goatee.
Okay.
And he's an ex. Wonderful current husband is clean-shaven, but I do like when he goes just a little scruff. I'll say 5:30.
Well, I guess the question would be to settle it. Your next husband, what will he be?
Kelly, you don't have to take this. You're going to get preferential treatment because of what Al just said. Give me someone who is known for their facial hair.
Well, I know my son picks out people who look like this person everywhere we go now, and he's 2.5. Santa Claus.
Oh, yes.
That is a great
an obvious one. You guys on hold. Don't go anywhere. We're running really behind. We're also on the other side. It's National Dog Appreciation Day.
Pet.
Is that
pet?
Pet. Pet.
It's
pet appreciation.
Well, that's the same thing.
Billy has been asking me about your journey to get Blue.
Yes.
And how expensive that really was to get a dog. You're going to enjoy this story. Our time's 9:19.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.